This program is supported by the KGNU listener members and by WOW Children's Museum. More information can be found at wowchildrensmuseum.org.
Support comes from The Westword, Denver's independent source of local news and culture. More information at westword.com.
Good evening. It's 1 minute after 7 p.m. on another pleasant Monday evening here on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins, and online worldwide at kgnu.org and afterfm.com. I'm DJ Number 7, welcoming you back to the Opera Box and the final part of an opera based on the historic visit of President Richard Nixon to China, ending a quarter century of diplomatic isolation between the two countries. You can listen to the previous parts of this opera, which we aired on May 4th and June 1st, respectively, by visiting the Opera Box show archives at afterfm.com. Tonight, using the miracles of modern technology, we adjust the dials of the Wayback Machine to the evening of June 6th, 2008, and the Ellie Calking Opera House in Denver for the conclusion of Nixon in China. In our last episodes, Air Force One had arrived at Beijing Airport on February 21, 1972. A small group of Chinese officials, led by the Premier Zhou Enlai and a military honor guard, greeted President Nixon and the First Lady Pat Nixon, the National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger and his assistant Winston Lord, and the Secretary of State William Rogers. Soon after, Nixon, Kissinger, Lord, and Zhou Enlai, together with a translator, visited Mao Zedong in his study. The at times bewildering conversation between Mao and Nixon only lasted an hour. That evening, the American party attended a large welcoming banquet in the Great Hall of the People. The next morning, Pat Nixon began a demanding sightseeing schedule. She greeted back-of-the-house staff at the hotel, a commune's clinic, school, and pig-raising facility, and then traveled to the Summer Palace and the Ming Tombs. That evening finds the Nixons, Madame Mao, and the Chinese premier attending the evening performance of The Red Detachment of Women, a political opera and ballet being staged at the Beijing Opera. Yes, it's an opera within an opera, and a disturbing one at that. The curtain rose to reveal three beautiful young women wearing rags and, oddly, new ballet shoes. They are at an estate on a tropical island and chained to posts. The woman in the center, the heroine, and, of course, the one most heavily laden with chains, is Wu Jinghua. Lao Tzu, the landlord's factotum, arrives, intent on amusing himself with the prisoners. But as he fumbles with Jinghua's shackles, she seizes the whip from Lao Tzu's hand and kicks him to the ground. The women escape into the jungle, but Lao Tzu recaptures them and sets to lashing Jinghua furiously with a cane. This torture so disturbs Pat Nixon that she rushes on stage, followed by the president, as Jinghua, resisting to the last, is beaten into unconsciousness. A tropical storm arrives on the stage, forcing the torturers to abandon their victims to the rain and winds. But, like a Colorado afternoon thunderstorm, this storm quickly ends. A new character arrives on stage to rescue Jinghua. He offers her a glass of orange juice. As she drinks, the clouds part, the stage sky fills with a blaze of light, and a full detachment of the Red Women's Militia marches in. Jinghua joins her fellow workers and peasants in this people's army. Now we rejoin the action in the courtyard of the tyrant's mansion. Officers of the Kuomintang, the Chinese regime being displaced by the Communist Revolution, political bosses, and fat cat farmers celebrate their host's birthday. President Nixon, who's still on stage after the earlier torture scene, presents himself to the doorman. Flashing a red and gilt invitation card, the president and his guest enter the party scene. Lao Tzu, the torturer, rushes to greet these exotic guests.
have my brief, I flatter myself, I know my man. The sine qua non, the face on the coin, you see what I mean. The empire builder, the man with his shoulder against the rule and will. He stands like a stone wall, and stinks, 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 stinks of success. I'm here to liaise with the backroom boys who know how to live. And me, I contrive to catch a few crumbs, the ringleaders' names, the gist of their schemes. Loose change.
Here, friend, something for you. You're talking like a real pro.
The president hands a few coins to Lao Tzu and tosses small change to the guards, who scramble on the ground and fight amongst themselves. Embarrassed, Lao Tzu orders his men to fetch the entertainment. A number of servant girls enter, dressed mostly in flowers. They are members of the Red Women's Militia in disguise. The guards compel them to dance. Grimly, the girls begin to execute a colorful Li nationality dance. Only one of them allows her anger to break the surface, and of course, it's Qinghua. Her eyes sweep the crowded courtyard, resting briefly on Lao Tzu. In a few moments, Madame Mao will rise from her chair in the audience and point to Qinghua, shouting at her to take her revenge on her torturer by firing a hidden automatic pistol. The dancer complies, but that moment will not be her actual cue. The political opera goes completely off script to the confusion of the acting company and the audience. The mercenaries have broken and scattered, and the Red Army dancers raise their flag over the mansion. Peasants push through the broken gates, weeping for joy. The granary has been opened. The president begins distributing grain to the hungry peasants. Meanwhile, the acting company severely rebukes the dancer playing Qinghua and disarms her. Madame Mao takes over the direction of the performance.
Oh, Beep, beep.
As Madame Mao wrapped up her speech from the stage, the curtain descended on the disrupted performance of the Beijing Opera Company, and another curtain descended to conclude the second act of Nixon in China. Now, before the third and final act begins, let's examine the future of the main characters. The premier during Nixon's visit, Zhou Enlai, will disappear from public view a few years later due to illness. He dies in January 1976, having been displaced in political office by the Gang of Four. By this point, Mao Zedong will suffer a series of heart attacks leading to his death in September of 1976 at age 82. His wife, Madame Mao, one of the leading members of the Gang of Four, will be arrested a month later together with the other members. All are sentenced to life imprisonment. Madame Mao, released in 1991 for medical treatment, will commit suicide. A few months after Nixon returns to China, he and other members of his administration attempt to cover up their involvement in directing the burglarization of the Democratic National Committee headquarters at the Watergate Building in Washington, D.C. President Nixon was successfully reelected later that year in a race against the anti-Vietnam War candidate, Senator George McGovern, but the gradual disclosure of obstruction of justice, of the bugging of offices of his political opponents, and the use of the FBI, CIA, and IRS against politicians and civilians opposed to his policies lead to Nixon's impeachment in 1974 and his resignation from the presidency. His successor, President Ford, visited China in 1975. Nixon returned to China in February of 1976 at the invitation of Chairman Mao a few months before Mao's death. He returned again in 1979 at the invitation of the then-premier Deng Xiaoping. Over the two decades after his resignation, Nixon gradually resumed a more public life, writing books and giving speeches. He died in 1994. As I mentioned in Part 2, only Henry Kissinger and Winston Lord survive today. Winston Lord, now 82, played a key role in restoring U.S. relations with China, including a secret trip to China in 1971 together with Henry Kissinger to arrange for Nixon's visit. Lord will remain involved with Chinese affairs through the Ford administration and also work closely with Kissinger in negotiating the U.S. exit from the Vietnam War. He will serve as ambassador to China in the Reagan administration and as Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs in the Clinton administration. Henry Kissinger, now 97, had spent 3 years in secret preparatory work with Chinese officials that led to Nixon's first visit. Kissinger will leave public office at the end of the Ford administration, but will continue a controversial career as a businessman and outspoken commentator on foreign affairs to this day. Now the audience is reassembled for Act 3 of Nixon in China. Let's join them for the Nixon's last night in Beijing. As the curtain rises, the president is very, very tired, and the lights do not flatter him. The First Lady looks fragile and heavily powdered. Madame Mao is smaller than they had remembered her, and Zhou Enlai seems old and quite worn out. All reminisce about past events in their respective lives in a desultory conversation of exhaustion. Only Chairman Mao appears at his best, full of the joy of youth and the hope of revolution. He is seated inside his portrait on the wall. Dr. Kissinger, in contrast, is impatient. He scratches the back of his head, his nose, and his ear.
Thank you.
some man you cannot satisfy. That's what I tell them. They can't say you didn't tell them. It's no good. All that I say is misconstrued. Your lipstick's crooked.
Is it? Oh. There isn't much that I can do. He's there. Who's in my handkerchief?
Please accept mine.
Enough. Who chose these numbers?
All of us. Doesn't she like the people's choice? Now for a solo on the spoons.
I like it when they play our tunes. Hit it, boys.
Chairman Mao, as his portrait, finally speaks. Madame Mao takes the chairman's hand and he climbs out of the portrait.
Why not?
Thank you. and to what end? Tell me. Premier, please. Where's the toilet? Through the door. Excuse me for one moment, please. We saw our parents' nakedness. Rivers of blood will be required to cover them. Rivers of blood.
Your paycheck till it screamed. There was a rent. There were those damn slave robbers. And the groceries.
You made that place a home.
That place was heaven next to this.
The lights went out.
You told me, dear.
the time I should have died. Let us examine what you did. We led a quiet life. We grew stronger. We worked behind the plow. And as we worked year after year, the yellow dust that filled the earth softened the Buddha's well-known face and made him seem like one of us.
We eat wild apricots.
The taste is still in my mouth.
Once we had roast chicken with purpose.
And a light film of dust settled on each plate.
Thank you. Soaked my uniform.
I began
to take in all the sights.
Pictured
a thousand coconuts. Sanded wood that smelled like meat. Jesus, it grabbed you by the throat. Dislocated. As we lie
king sleeps naked. Murderers stretch out in doorways in shadows.
As we ride eastwards to Peking,
a system, 5-card stud, taught me a lot about mankind. Speak softly and don't show your hand, became my motto. Pacific Theater was not much to write home about.
Yes, dear, I think you taught me that. I read it by the
I was me.
Strong.
The customer is king. My way of saying thanks. Before dawn, the birds begin, the warblers who prefer the dark, the cage birds unseen.
Nixon in China, composed by John Adams in 1984, with libretto written by Alice Goodman. You've been listening to the performance by the Colorado Symphony at the L.A. Caulking Opera House in Denver in June 2008. In visiting China in February of 1972, Nixon ended a 25-year period of diplomatic isolation between the two countries. We are now 48 years past that event, two generations of a complex evolution of relations far longer than that period of isolation. In contrast, relations between the U.S. and the Soviet Union were never broken, although two world wars and the development of nuclear weapons introduced many complications. After 75 years, the Soviet Union ended in 1980, 30 years ago. U.S.-Cuban diplomatic relations were severed in 1961, an isolation that persisted for more than twice as long as the break in U.S.-China relations. After 54 years, relations were restored by President Obama. Even this 54-year period, however, is not the longest break in international relations for the U.S. Japan broke off all diplomatic relations with the Western world for 210 years. Not only did the Tokugawa shogun close diplomacy, but he also prevented Japanese from traveling abroad or returning to Japan, and he prohibited construction of ocean-going ships. Only Korea, China, and the Netherlands were permitted to trade with Japan until 1854, when a U.S. Navy fleet led by Commodore Perry forced trade and travel permissions on the shogun. This opening triggered a period of fascination with Japan in Western Europe and the United States, an interest which, unsurprisingly, was reflected in opera. And next Monday, we'll listen to the first opera inspired by the opening of Japan. It was composed 30 years after the visit of Commodore Perry's fleet, and it's hardly the serious treatment of historic persons and events that we've heard in Nixon in China. In fact, Japan is used as a thin veil for a continuing satire of British institutions and pompous leaders. So please join me, DJ number 7, next Monday evening at 7 p.m. for The Mikado, the most popular of Gilbert and Sullivan's comic operas, and actually the most popular of all musical theater productions worldwide, here on your community radio station, KGNU.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for... Thank you for tuning in. Hello. This is KGNU. This is KGNU. This is KGNU, Boulder, Denver. Good evening. This is KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm EC, here for a Classic Monday with Michael Dallala. Good evening.
So great to be here. So great to be in front of a microphone and not be in my pajamas. We're doing this in the studio, right?
We were able to come in this evening. It's one of the beauties of just many remote possibilities of having more than one studio for KGNU and of, well, we've hunkered down rather a bit, and so far so good.
We've been luckier than many. We have all the toys to produce at home, but it's nice to be.
Yeah, thank you for that.
It's just great to be back in this wonderful studio again.
So we have a very special program lined up for you this evening. Of course, it's hard not to consider what's going on in our world as we came to programming. The music we're not getting to attend in person, but the music that we're listening to nonetheless, music, there's so much music, I believe, being created right now, so... Down the road, I think that'll be fascinating to dive into more. And just historic figures that are significant right now, and recent figures as well.
What are we going to start with?
So we thought we would begin with something from the wonderful singer Jessie Norman. She just passed away last September. Just in a league of her own as a singer, Oh, and by the way, she was a very rare black opera singer. This is her performing Je te vu from Eric Satie.